Developing Your People, Common Sense Leadership in the Workplace, Volume 2, Employee Development Strategies, written by Harry T. Roman, narrated by Kat Lookabaugh. Introduction. There is no greater responsibility in the workplace than being a leader or manager in charge of developing employees, for you will shape their careers and help them realize their dreams. In this 3-volume audiobook series, we explore common sense ways to guide employees as they grow. I have based this information on 36-plus years in business, managing and leading employees, as well as leading numerous interdisciplinary project teams. I derived much of my wisdom and experience from fellow IEEE members who have served as my bosses, colleagues, and longtime friends. In passing this knowledge along to you, I hope you derive as much pleasure and satisfaction as I have experienced. The volumes in this trilogy are Volume 1, Key Skills Employees Will Need, Volume 2, Employee Development Strategies, Volume 3, Career Management, Teamwork, and Empowerment. Enjoy. Harry T. Roman. Teach employees about process. How you do something can often become as important as what you gain doing it, because in the information age, process has become as important as product. The analogy here is that the answer to any problem is directly related to the quality of the questions one asks at the outset of the problem-solving exercise. It is not necessarily how fast you solve the problem, but rather how completely you solve the problem. And completeness is measured by asking the right questions. How you formulate and ask questions is the problem-solving process. It is a very valuable skill to master in the workplace. The ultimate goal is to solve the problem quickly and completely, resulting in competitive advantage, because you can then get to market before someone else does. But the first emphasis must be on quality in the process. Getting to the market quickly with inferior products and services is, at best, a waste of time and resources. Teaching process to employees is vital. It underlies other basic things they need to do in the workplace to be successful. It is an invaluable discipline that will yield dividends over and over for you and them, because you will have affected the way people approach and solve problems. They will apply this discipline everywhere on the job, no matter what they are involved with. When done correctly, it is a true culture change, measurable by real efficiency improvements. Teaching process is teaching employees how to think. It is a discipline. The more employees are allowed to use this skill, the better they will become at it, and the more ingrained it will become. Imbuing employees with a profound sense of how they do things and why it affects their performance is a giant step toward increased competitiveness. It doesn't matter whether employees are professional in stature or not. The rising tide of process improvement lifts all boats in the harbor. Everyone benefits. We can relate this discussion back to something we discussed in Volume 1, integrated decision-making, another critical skill. The listener will find some repetition here, but it is important that the teaching of process to employees be thoroughly understood. To be competitive, employees must understand and comprehend what and why they are doing it. It is similar to the basics in sports, which coaches always return to when they have problems. The thinking employee is the valuable employee. Integrated decision-making. So very much of what gets done on the job today requires that we take a broad look at the world. In the machine age, we could afford to design new products and services based on just a situation's technology and economics. In the information age, that is no longer true. We must expand our thinking and analyses to include other factors as well, like environmental impacts, customer interfaces, sociological impacts, governmental and regulatory impacts, global influences, etc. In essence, the process one follows to engender new products and services in the information age is more encompassing, more integrated. The speed by which we arrive at a solution to a problem is not as important as the completeness of the solution. Only after we can solve problems well does speed really become important. Completeness makes us wonder, have we asked the right questions? Did we include the key variables in our analyses? Have we quantified as much of the problem as we could? Is our product design up to the quality our customers expect? Did we do the market analysis as completely as we should have? Are we satisfied with the competitor analysis? Notice the link to the quality ethic so prevalent in companies today. The highest quality solution to a problem is the most complete solution to the problem. Quality is not speed. It is thoroughness, and it derives from the thoughtful questions people ask about the problem they are about to solve. Being thorough implies the importance of good planning and organizing skills. This prelude explains why it will be important to work with employees, especially new young professional employees. You must coach and counsel these young minds about the need to broadly evaluate a problem and to take the time to comprehensively plan the work that will lead to a good solution. You must teach them the process of problem evaluation, but there can be conflicting signals to watch out for in our ever-hectic workplaces. Often, we give the strong impression that everything has to be done yesterday. Rush jobs are the way we communicate the immediacy of a solution. The boss needs this one right away. These are very strong motivators to drop everything and to put that fire out. Certainly, these problems should be solved, but by people who have their problem-solving process well-tuned. Young employees should not be confused between speed and quality of solution. You must step in and teach them how to carefully plan, organize, and then execute a solution, gradually working them up to the rush jobs as their skills improve. Young or new employees can get trapped into the desire to do their work quickly to impress their boss. This habit is a dangerous one to lapse into. Completeness has no substitute, which is what a quality solution means. Merely working harder and faster doesn't always cut it. As the leader, your job is to foster a culture of completeness, helping employees understand the long-term benefits of doing the job right, even if it takes a little longer. Plan for the extra time, especially when you request rush jobs from others, too. It is important to do your work and the rush jobs, and it is also important to train and develop your employees for the future work and rush jobs. Firemen take the time to train for future fires. Your valuable employees should do the same. This discussion argues for involving your employees in the original discussions leading up to the actual assignment of work. Make them part of the process that identifies the work to be done and the way in which influencing factors will be taken into account. Run through the process with your staff. Teach them how to ask the tough questions and find the information hidden below a problem surface. Many schools and colleges are aware of the need to teach critical thinking skills in the classroom in preparation for the workplace. Teachers do understand the process, and it is reflected in the pedagogy they practice in their lesson plans. In today's complex world, people and customers do not accept product claims and touted benefits at first glance. The public is considerably more astute about product claims, customer advocacy issues, and their legal rights. They are likely to ask tough, often very penetrating questions. Your customers and competitors have access to information, too. How you do what you do with that information makes the competitive difference. Your employees' skills and intellect will determine the strength of that competitiveness. What they have learned in school and been able to transfer to their workaday world is crucial to your company's future. Some ways to teach integrated decision-making. How do you help employees develop the broad thinking that promotes integrated decision-making? Here are some ways to consider. Involve employees in the original thinking that goes into the early formative stages of a new product or service. Solicit their input. Let them define the problem and get agreement so everyone understands the direction being taken. Have them develop a plan of action for launching the product. One often finds the greatest wisdom in asking simple things. Show them the power of asking questions such as, "What is the problem at hand? What do we know about the problem? Where can we get information to help us understand the problem? What things don't we know and must find? Does this problem look like anything we have solved before? Are there any surprises lurking to jump out and get us? And is there a market for the solution of this problem? Ingrain the simple question-asking process. A situation's who, what, when, where, and how will reveal quite a bit and save time later if you ask the right questions. Be consistent in your direction and the signals you give off. The consistency of style and approach to problems helps ingrain a culture of inquisitiveness, challenging employees to move through the question gates to the right answer and putting it all together in an integrated fashion. Encourage your staff to read broadly, bringing ideas and concepts from other areas into the work. Diversity spurs creative thinking, new analogies, and hybrid insights, which could all lead to a competitive edge in the marketplace. Have them attend conferences and seminars, and then discuss the new techniques learned with other members of the staff to enrich their thinking. Practice the art of teardown sessions, where each employee can comment freely on the status of projects in progress and critically analyze where the project is headed. Look at the project's weak and strong points and frankly review the potential of its success. Recommend bold new avenues that might improve the product. Spur an environment where challenges are welcome and sought after. Let your employees know it is okay to push the envelope. Study case histories of both successes and failures in your industry and outside of it. Learn from others' experience, profit from their mistakes, and study the history of product developments. Supply some seed money to challenge your staff to solve nagging problems. They can use the seed money to perform some basic detective work to prepare a larger, more formal project proposal for later review and approval. You can make the proposals competitive among your staff members. Let competition losers learn from the winners and see how their integrated thinking methods and decision-making led to a more acceptable proposal. In this way, staff members learn from each other. Establish a visiting speakers forum and invite industry speakers to spend hours with you and your staff to discuss ideas, issues, and important trends that could impact your company and industry. Get your employees thinking about the future. Establish a goal for your employees to join professional societies and organizations allied with your industry. Encourage them to attend meetings and bring back information to share with their colleagues. Invite visiting professors to work with your employees during college summer recess. Expose them to the different perspectives professors have on problem solving and researching new topic areas. Consider using student project teams during the school year to work with your employees to solve problems. Both the students and your staff will benefit from the experience of seeing different problem-solving techniques. Integrated decision-making comes with regular practice and exposure to a wide variety of experiences. Make it a habit to ask the basic questions over and over, and make your people understand how important it is to examine all of a problem's different aspects. Teach them how to make trade-offs between competing constraints. The real world of competition is give and take, and they should feel comfortable with compromise. Supporting employee development. In this section, we examine supporting aspects of the developmental process. Discussion items will range from coaching and counseling employees to the cost of developing people. The key thing to remember here is the constancy of the developmental effort. It must be taken seriously. The progress of employee development must be checked, measured, monitored, and when off course, it must be corrected. Coaching and counseling. Ideally, employees should have an opportunity to sit down with their supervisors or managers to discuss past performance and also to identify areas for improvement and growth. The frequency and extent of such meetings varies among companies, but generally averages out to at least once per year. Some progressive companies have employee meetings as often as once every 3 or 4 months. These meetings are an important time to renew and invigorate the coaching and counseling that can help an individual grow and mature within an organization. Managers should offer honest assessments of an individual's skills and performance during these meetings. It's not unlike a sports coach sitting down with athletes to evaluate the strong and weak points of a team's most recent performances and overall training program. The coaching tone and tempo of these counseling meetings should be upbeat, designed to lift, inspire, and motivate an individual to reach higher in their career development. Counseling identifies the good and not-so-good assessment points. Objective and forthright in its outlook, counseling bores into the areas of concern that have been noticed during the last counseling session. There should be a written account of the meeting for the benefit of both manager and subordinate, because it documents what areas need to be improved and why. It forms the basis for monitoring improvement. From the written document, a plan of action can be developed for the employee to use as a guide to improvement. Coaching involves the motivation factor, because simply writing down a plan does not guarantee success or improvements. Again, like a sports coach, the manager or supervisor must follow up and check in with the employee to stimulate the desired actions when necessary. As the leader, you must be ready to step in and encourage. Stand back and cheer, and if necessary, tell a developing employee when they have either done well or missed the mark, and then remind them of the action plan that you both developed. Coaching and counseling is a partnership between you and your employees. It is a management and leadership function. Counseling is the dispassionate manager assessing the situation and telling it like he or she sees it. It is quantitative in its comments, criticisms, and expected improvements. Coaching is the qualitative motivational aspect that helps bring about the desired action through a variety of interpersonal skills. You cannot achieve success in developing your employees merely by counseling or critiquing them. They must see the leadership side of your commitment to them. Together, coaching and counseling make up the substructure of mentoring. The mentor can be you, a superior, or perhaps another senior-level role model within the organization. It can even be several people who influence an individual's growth over time. Mentoring is a long-term process, often taking years of close association, commitment, and influence to achieve significant results. Mentors have protégés who are often groomed for certain corporate positions or specialized work functions. Mentors are natural leaders and teachers who can often influence many employees through their sustained actions and techniques, and who go on to perpetuate an organizational culture. Mentoring is coaching and counseling in its most intense form. World-renowned sports coaches are mentors to their athletes, creating whole dynasties of winning teams and consistently outstanding performers. In the past few years, coaching and counseling has taken on an added dimension. It is now necessary to evaluate and assess performance based on individual and team accomplishments, because so often now in industry, we work in cross-functional and interdisciplinary project teams. The team's success demands that we pay attention to how this interactivity helps, hinders, or amplifies growth of individuals and their team members. Teams are now a business model fact of life and must be accounted for in coaching and counseling sessions. Individual performance is not a complete picture of employee development or growth potential. Remember to factor in team performance too. Reward and recognition. Ultimately, an employee wants and needs to know when they have achieved something and to receive feedback from their superiors. Positive feedback also has the effect of reinforcing good behaviors. Feedback can come in two forms, monetary and non-monetary rewards. The traditional annual raise or merit increase is the standard way most companies acknowledge work well done. Some companies give bonus or special achievement awards for outstanding accomplishments. As we discussed earlier, however, money is not always the best way to motivate or reward people. Numerous studies have shown that on a scale of 1 to 10, most employees, at least at the professional and semi-professional levels, usually rank monetary rewards as 8th or 9th in importance. Being individually recognized for their accomplishments ranks much higher, generally in the top 3. Clearly, both monetary and non-monetary forms of reward and recognition play a role in compensating employees. Here are some suggestions for non-monetary forms of recognition you might want to consider for application in your company. This listing came directly from a series of company courses I taught. The courses dealt with delegation, motivation, and communication. As an exercise in the courses, I asked all the participants to suggest non-financial forms of recognition they would like to see implemented. So this list is straight from the horse's mouth. You might want to ask your employees what they would like to see implemented at your company. Here is a raw list of what employees recommended. Make it possible for good performers to fill in for their boss at upper-level manager staff meetings and/or other corporate functions. Let them fill in for the vacationing boss and actually get experience with running the office. Give them staff to develop and resources to use on their projects and work in progress. Let them work on special projects and assignments. Increase their budget or give them discretionary funding to use on new projects or as seed money to address unusual problems. Increase their budget allocation and authority. Give them more responsibility. Allow them to present a paper, give a talk, or attend a conference of their choice. Provide them with compensatory time off. And let them take a continuing education course of their choice. The message is clear. Employees really do want to grow and develop, and their main interest is not just getting more money. The motivation seems inherent in just about all of the folks I've come in contact with, both in my company and outside of it, professional or non-professional. Why not make your employees part of the continuing education movement in industry? Ask them what they think would be the ways they could use to develop their skills and talents. You might be very surprised and find that the plan for growth is right there waiting to be tapped. All you have to do is ask. It's all about reward and recognition. Use the powerful inner drive people have and focus it on solving critical problems for your company. And then, when you solve the problems, share the glory with everyone. Computer skills. While all this developmental activity is going on with your employees, remember to allow them to keep pace with the future, such as the expected rapid increased growth in computer applications. This growth is what is actually driving all the change in the first place, so it becomes doubly important for employees to have the latest tools and automated techniques at their command. Our computers keep radically changing. They are not the rigid, unforgiving black boxes they used to be. All sorts of flexible and user-friendly software is on the market, and the innovation is sure to continue as the future unfolds. You need to connect your people to these resources because computers plus intelligence equals punching power in the marketplace. Today's software and advanced computing techniques can deal with uncertainty, capture human knowledge and decision-making, discern trends and recognize complex patterns in masses of seemingly chaotic data, draw analogies between similar circumstances, project potential outcomes, and adaptively learn from past experiences. The understanding and use of these new computer tools requires two things: training in how to actually use and manipulate the tools to get the answers you and your employees are after, and a profound new understanding of the impact of information technology on your corporation. The second item is by far the tougher new skill to obtain, but invariably the most important one for the long-term health of the company. It is not enough to take new computer courses and learn new software. Employees must be able to envision, project, and implement the new techniques to actually solve problems. Today's computer technology is highly dynamic and ever-changing, getting smarter as we get smarter. It's much like our workplaces. Change is ever-present. These new computer programs and tools will not simply get updated, they will evolve. This evolution is not just a technical issue. It involves the culture of change we talked about earlier in this audiobook, the one we keep touching upon throughout. Our computerized tools are another personification of continuous improvement. They will be in constant flux, as will employees, always being challenged to change and grow. It is your job as a leader to bring this message to the ears and hearts of your employees. Teamwork. Along with the effort on quality and continuous improvement processes introduced into most American corporations, goes a renewed emphasis on teamwork. Very few workers have the luxury of working completely alone. For integrated decision-making to have meaning, people must interact and exchange ideas, ultimately making tough trade-offs and moving new products and services out the door. Specially orchestrated teams can be assembled to tackle tough problems and break logjams. Often, the performance and singular contributions of the individual can get subsumed into the team's work, perhaps leaving the outstanding performer with a hollow feeling. Teamwork is not new, nor is it a cure-all for what ails the industry. It is part of the broader quality picture. Often, workers can be part individual performer and part team player, being assigned to a part-time team assignment with a limited scope and lifetime. Other times, employees might be assigned to a special team full-time, for several years or more. It depends on the situation, and employees must be trained to be flexible and adaptable to both kinds of circumstances. In a changing workplace, they could be moving back and forth in assignments rather quickly. Some management gurus have talked about the end of the specialist or expert in an area. They reason that with all the coming change in industry, the generalist will emerge as the postmodern corporate model. In their minds, specialists can always be hired from an outside pool of consultants. Perhaps this model will be true, but the need to be flexible is paramount. At times, your employees may be forced to become specialists, and at other times, generalists. You need to be there to help them see the need for the transition and to help them make it. It's coaching and counseling time again. This transition can be especially hard on your technical staff and professionals who tend toward deep specialization. Generalization can be threatening for them, mostly when their skills are averaged into a team setting. Teach your teams why the team setting is important and show them how it can work to their overall growth and benefit. Don't take for granted that people naturally want to work in teams. Poorly controlled and led team dynamics can be very destructive. The topic of teams and what not to allow will be the subject of a section in the next audiobook in this series. It is an important subject for the leader to understand, and we shall return to explore it. Character building for employees. Character building activities can serve to develop your employees. This section discusses some that I have learned from experience that are of great value to staff members. Public speaking. One of the best ways to become comfortable with public speaking is to simply practice it whenever possible. Books and courses can be helpful, but my personal favorite is to join a speaker's bureau, if one is available within your company, and learn from people who are already accomplished in the art. Many large companies have such bureaus, where employees go out to civic, fraternal, educational, and professional organizations to give lectures about interesting aspects of the company's business or new projects. Corporate speakers' bureaus often provide luncheon, dinner, and keynote speakers for events. In these forums, neophyte speakers can get a chance to practice their skills and learn how to field audience questions. Many speaker bureaus run clinics for new speakers to teach them some of the basics. Here, speakers can swap techniques and styles and learn how to develop different approaches for different audiences. If your company does not have a speakers bureau, consider starting one. It is well worth the effort for the skills it teaches within a short period of time. You may find that some of your employees are active in political functions in their hometowns and already possess good speaking skills. Some may belong to a Roastmasters club, where they use their speaking skills for entertainment and fraternal purposes. These folks can become the nucleus of your speaker's bureau and help train others to become adept on their feet. Here is an example of where employees' outside skills can be brought into the company for benefit of all of your employees. Giving presentations. Once employees are comfortable speaking in front of an audience, it's time to cultivate their presentational skills. Presentations are designed to sell ideas, concepts, and projects, and often follow a formalized convention. It is a major communication mode in industry, and it is quite different in its intent from a public speech or talk. Presentations are logically structured to both pose important questions while supplying the needed answers, usually in the form of a recommendation for a new product or service. Typically, a series of slide topics comprise the presentation format. What is the problem? How should it be solved? What are the resources needed? What does it cost to solve? What are the benefits? And how soon can we solve it? This logical format is reminiscent of what we discussed in the sections on process and integrated decision-making. Presentations are an excellent way to develop the logical thinking process in employees, especially young ones new to the job. A favorite technique is to limit your presentation to 10 slides and see if you can present your case in just this number of slides. The skill is an excellent one to develop in your people, and you, as an experienced manager, can do this together with them. Have them practice while you critique their work. No one enjoys standing in front of people and possibly making bloopers in public. But you know the value of having employees who can give good presentations in front of senior management and bring back the budget dollars for those important projects. You have been there, and you can provide the guidance. Build their confidence and character, and at the same time build a stronger departmental team. Reviewing performance. A real growth experience for someone to undertake is the review of another's performance, either for an annual merit review or for a coaching counseling session. This experience is humbling for the first-timer and a necessary step in the maturation process of your team of employees. It will teach them how much effort goes into developing employees, the importance of the task, and the impact good objective comments can have on the growth of an individual, and ultimately, the company. As employees show signs of maturity and growth in the direction of managerial positions, they should be given the opportunity to evaluate the performance of their colleagues on both the technical and professional levels. Assigning staff to an employee and making them responsible for that staff's performance and growth is an important step up the organizational ladder. And you should be ready to provide the necessary coaching and counseling to that new manager to make sure they are equipped to handle the new load of responsibility you have just given them. It's an awesome task to help another human being grow and develop. Teach your new managers how to handle their new responsibilities and explain why it is an integral part of their day-to-day activities. Humans are the ultimate resource, remember? Set an example here and teach tomorrow's leaders about the value of employees. Professional societies. Employees should be strongly encouraged to join professional societies relevant to their corporate work or industry. Societies offer an unparalleled opportunity to build relationships with others in the same industry while teaching your employees valuable information about their industry. Here are just a few major benefits that professional society membership offer. Exposes members to the latest technological advances and literature about such advances. Gives them the opportunity to meet their industrial counterparts and to exchange experiences and information. Teaches members how the all-important world of standards making operates and how it influences new product development. Provides members with access to continuing education materials and opportunities, and gives them access to the latest techniques and methods being employed in the industry through the society's published magazines, books, and journals. Beyond just maturing an employee, professional societies give employees a better perspective on their places in industry and a solid grounding in business ethics. This affiliation has real positive benefits to the employees, which will ultimately flow through to the company. As their leader, you should encourage this form of activity, and if possible, introduce them to the societies that you belong to, so they can see what goes on at meetings and develop a desire to mature within their profession. Industry committees. Many industries make use of special committees to address problems of global concern to all companies within that industry. Getting key staff members assigned to perform work on these committees can have important growth potential for the employees who are assigned and significant benefits to your company as well. These committees can be regular standing committees, short-term working groups, or special task forces to solve a specific problem. In all cases, an assignment here is a definite character builder, giving employees a bird's-eye view of how their industry operates while letting them directly contribute to it. The contacts made and the technical information gathered can be put to immediate use within your company. Knowing where to go to get information is a vital part of the information age workplace. Employees who possess such knowledge save invaluable time, and time is money. Committee assignments are network builders for the company. Those companies active in their industry's committee structure generally do better than those who are not. Employees who work on committees should periodically debrief what they have learned. By giving regular updates about the work of the committee, you and other management leaders will learn what's going on, what is being accomplished, and the value gained from association with the committee. You will also invariably pick up competitor information, which by itself may be worth the entire investment in employee time and resources. Keep in mind that these assignments may be viewed as quite prestigious for aspiring employees. They can also be viewed as rewards for past good performance. How such assignments are made can be powerful motivators for the assignee. Choose your employees wisely for such assignments and then teach them how to make the most from the assignment. If you are on an industry committee, take employees along with you to see what goes on there, or maybe consider letting them fill in for you to get a feel for the work and interactions. Committee assignments leverage your corporate resources. Use them. They are like interest on bank accounts. You get out what you put into them. Community service. Most progressive companies know the value of having employees active in their communities. It serves to round out an employee, giving them a perspective on their role in the greater scheme of things, and showing them the place of their company in the community. Many executives were and remain very active in community affairs. Chances are they learned many of their interpersonal skills in such forums, and your employees can too. Encourage them to take on the responsibility of hometown activities. Some will naturally gravitate toward it and may even hold elected or appointed offices. These experiences can be directly transferred to an employee's working skills. In the long term, everyone benefits from employees active in their communities. Teaching. It has often been said that there is no better way to learn a subject than to teach it. Among your employees are probably several natural teachers who seem to have the ability to make the complex sound simple. These employees are an important resource to you because they naturally spread their thoughts and knowledge around the corporation. They can also teach others to teach. A wonderful environment can be created if older employees teach younger ones the ropes, and while the younger ones teach the older ones about new emerging technologies. This give-and-take environment is something to shoot for in the workplace. It lies at the heart of the continuous improvement ethic of the information age. Tap into those talented individuals who teach night school or serve as adjunct faculty at local colleges. These employees can network you to the academic community, where exciting new theories and methodologies are being developed and tried. Who wouldn't want to be part of such an exciting opportunity and apply the latest out in your company? Colleges can also be an important source of consulting and specialty expertise. Employees like to teach, often not even knowing they are doing it. Let them know it is okay to learn from each other and to bring their teaching abilities into the workplace. Make teaching a regular part of an employee's work routine. Assign employees to teach certain new subjects to their colleagues. Have them work with those natural teachers and watch how quickly the excitement spreads. Start an intellectual fire in your department. Make teaching and learning work for everyone's benefit. Personal Growth Library. The practice of writing a resume at least once a year is a growth experience for your employees. They should be able to add new things to the previous resume, or else they are not growing. Show them how to construct a good, solid resume and help them understand that this document is a personal record of their maturation. Ideally, as an employee matures, their resume should reflect new skills as well as depth in those categories. Development should be both broad and deep. I have used something called a personal growth library for many years and have found it most helpful. You might want to share it with your employees. The library is a file cabinet containing references of my growth in my profession. It helps me remember what I did, when I did it, and documents my professional growth. The file drawers contain a number of tabbed files by subject matter representing accomplishments. The files contain technical papers and articles, copies of major reports I was involved in, patents I have received, letters of commendation, descriptions of projects I have worked on, committee assignments, various job descriptions for past responsibilities, professional society activities, courses taught, community activities and positions held, and awards and honors received. In essence, the file cabinet is a distillation of my career that is easily accessible and representative of my growth. My objective is to add new files and grow all the files as thick as I can. I also personally shoot for growth, both broad and deep. The real value of this file is the raw material for my resume, which I write every 6 months. This file is a personal commitment I keep to measure my growth. It is my way of making sure I am always improving myself. Wouldn't you want your employees to get into the discipline of measuring their growth? Perhaps the file cabinet technique would work for them too. Professional papers. Writing and presenting professional papers is a great way to get an employee to grow. It serves to make them develop their oral and written communication skills, gives them recognition for their work, and puts the company in the spotlight. So often, an employee's industrial peers critically review these papers, and it reinforces the importance of doing quality work. Writing the paper itself is an intellectual challenge for the employee, but chances are others in your company will read it, and that employee will quickly earn a reputation as an active member of the company. Again, like industry committee assignments, writing papers and presentations can develop a large network of industry people who can be tapped for their knowledge. I can personally attest to the value of writing papers. It gets employees noticed and your department noticed as progressive. Never discourage employees from doing writing papers and giving presentations. Help them develop the skills they will need. Why not co-author a paper with them and help them? Build their confidence. Young employees' development needs. The young employee has a particularly acute need for mentoring and development. Generally, these bright young leaders of tomorrow are technically competent but not yet well-rounded. They need some real-world tempering to give them an edge. There are probably business skills deficiencies that you should address as soon as possible. And most likely, you should have performance, coaching, counseling sessions more often with them to make sure they are on the right track in their recommended improvements. It is also good to pair them off with experienced senior-level personnel who can show them the ropes, provide perspective to the job, and give them that caring hand that is so important in the first 2 years of training. In this section, we are going to quickly cover a number of topics where the young worker will need to come up to speed. Oral written communications skills. Most managers lament the amount of improvement young workers need in oral and written communication skills. The lack of these skills has become a major complaint, not only in the technical professions, but also in just about all the other professions as well. These very important skills are just not practiced enough or given the rigorous treatment they should have taught in the school years. Too many young workers are astounded at the amount of time communication skills take out of their workday. Practice, patience, and repetition are unfortunately the best remedy for this skill deficiency. It couldn't hurt for the employees to take a short course in the subject to reinforce its importance. Project management. Project management skills are essential for everyone, especially the young worker. They need to grasp and apply the basics to the rather simplified projects they will be responsible for during the first couple of years. Knowing how to budget time, manpower, and resources are critical first lessons to be learned, as well as concise and clear documentation of the progress of their projects. Project management is where the communication skills just discussed get reinforced. A formal course on the subject of project management is recommended, and you can choose from a wide variety in the training world. You might even offer one right in your own company. Mentoring could very much benefit this learn-by-doing skill. Let the experienced project managers teach the neophytes where the traps and bad practices are. Be careful to teach the young worker about the legalities, contractual pitfalls, and ethics breaches that can haunt the project management function. They need to know how everything ties together, and they need very much to know how to interact with vendors, subcontractors, and consultants. Start them off small and let them earn their way up the project manager ladder. It starts out as a slow climb, but it will accelerate with experience. Supervision. Young employees will usually get their first dose of supervising and managing with their first professional job. These skills can be quite unsettling for them because almost none of what they will need to know and do in this area has ever been taught to them in school. Sure, theoretically they know the principles of management, but they don't have much experience at all with the one-on-one interactions with operating staff. If there are unions involved and a rigid system of quotas imposed, it can add tremendous pressure to the young employee. Many of the people, if not all of them, they will be asked to supervise may be older than they and, of course, much more experienced. There can be resentment from workers being supervised, and the inexperience of the young employee can result in obvious misdirection of workers and lost productivity. Try to remove as many obstacles for the new employee as soon as possible, and coach and counsel them about the important need for everyone to learn from each other. Teach them the fine art of involving all employees in decision-making, empowering them to get the job done. Show them the benefits of trusting in their employees and always being forthright with them. I recommend the young employee be firmly apprenticed to an experienced worker for at least several years to learn the important lessons of dealing with people. Estimates and budgets. In the increasingly cost-conscious workplace, the art of estimating costs and developing budgets is a valuable tool for all employees to learn. It is the way to establish monetary controls on how and when money should be spent, letting management know that you are taking precautions to husband the precious capital and operating funds you have been entrusted with. Unfortunately, the fever pitch world of the young employee, all too often doing work, takes precedence over the costs. And in many cases, budgets get overrun and bad impressions are made. When the costs to be incurred do not justify changing a work scope or meeting an accelerated deadline, managers and employees must take the trade-offs into account. Young employees must take care to exercise good judgment to understand and realize when to draw the line on increased expenditures. Teach them how valuable the monetary resources of the company are and how management expects them to take as much time with getting their budgets right as in doing the work. The marketplace. Just because your company can build something does not mean it will be sold at a profit. As you know, the marketplace can be very unforgiving. If there is no need for something, it probably won't sell. The whole process begins with the customer's needs to have something they perceive as valuable. Trying to create something and boosting a need for it at the same time is difficult and probably worthwhile only for a novelty market. Young employees need to understand the market and learn how it sends signals to companies like yours. It's worthwhile for your young employees to spend some time with the marketing folks in your company to develop a sense for how products get started from interactions with the customer, followed by detailed studies of the potential sales that could result from such new products. All too often, the market is taken for granted, sometimes even by very experienced people who should have known better. Do your young employees a big favor. Show them the whole process from customer suggestions for new products right on down to the new product going out the door headed for a store shelf. How do companies train their young employees? Some prefer to use the technique I have referred to throughout this section. Use mentors and more experienced employees and apprentice the young employees to them for a couple of years. Others have established training programs where the young employees tour a number of departments and learn how the whole company interacts. This method is more costly and tends to postpone the young employee's productivity until the training cycle is completed. The theory is that the employees will be much better at what they do and will commit less errors in the long term. My own immersion into the business world was a combination of an extended training program plus mentoring. Still other companies simply throw the young employees into the deep end of the pool to see what they can do. Corporate culture generally dictates what method is used, and to an extent, the industry does too, especially if competition in that industry is keen. Some companies are known for starting their young employees at the very bottom and making them learn every aspect of the corporation's operations. The continuing education thrust of the information age has opened up many formalized training opportunities for companies. Colleges, private companies, consultants, and specialized educational service companies have blossomed to provide a wealth of training services to just about all industries. You might want to take advantage of these programs and send your young employees there as needed to round out their skills. Choose wisely, however, for the costs do vary quite a bit, and you should know what you are actually buying on behalf of the employee. An area you should certainly check into is the cooperative education programs that are available with colleges and universities. Here, students alternatively study and work in the real world, thereby adding an important dimension of reality to their academic studies. Let's take a look at the benefits that can accrue to you and your company by having cooperative education students working part-time for you. These students are knowledgeable about the business world and develop a savvy for making decisions because they have worked in it. You can hire the cooperative student full-time after graduation and know what the person is capable of accomplishing. The motivation level of the employee is high because they have already worked for you. They are productive the moment they assume a full-time position. And finally, you will have less startup costs with the new employee because they already know the ropes, the people, and the routine. Cooperative education opportunities are a terrific way to hire good, full-time personnel. During their internship as a cooperative education student, employees learn the basics from the first day they appear on the job. You preview their performance for their 2 to 3 year apprenticeship with you, and if you are satisfied, you can hire them when they graduate. What a win-win deal! Look for more of this type of education to spread to other schools and disciplines. Talk to some local schools and see what they offer. About the author. Harry T. Roman holds 12 U.S. patents, received numerous engineering, invention, and teaching awards, and he has published more than 550 scientific papers, articles, monographs, and books. In 1999, the New Jersey Technology Education and Engineering Association named him a Distinguished Technology Educator. In 2005, the New Jersey Inventors Hall of Fame honored Roman with an Inventor of the Year Award for his application of mobile robots in hazardous work environments. In 1996, IEEE honored him with a Meritorious Achievement Award for developing continuing education products for IEEE members. Again, in 2006, IEEE honored Roman with an Outstanding Engineer Award. Every month, over 65,000 educators read his feature articles appearing in various national publications. In PSE&G's R&D group, where he worked for 36 years, Roman directed and consulted on more than $100 million worth of projects and programs and taught graduate-level R&D project management courses at the New Jersey Institute of Technology, NJIT. Throughout his engineering career, he worked with schools around the state, bringing the excitement of real-world problem-solving into the classroom. Retired since 2006, Roman has published over 70 resource books, math card games, and science kits for teachers, valued for their head-in-hands approach to teaching creativity, invention, STEM, engineering, and alternate energy topics in the classroom. Roman now spends many hours in the classroom working with teachers and students in West Orange, Montclair, and Livingston, conducting special student project team challenges. He is an advisor and author to the Edison Innovation Foundation and a docent and special lecturer at the Thomas Edison National Historical Park in West Orange. Roman also admits to writing and publishing poetry and short stories. This has been Developing Your People, Common Sense Leadership in the Workplace, Volume 2, Employee Development Strategies, written by Harry T. Roman. Narrated by Kat Lukabaugh.